The thief on your left.
No tengo. Sí, soy yo.
You can look at his eye on your right.
How
about that?
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us for the fifth and last briefing of the 2019 General Assembly. My name is Chieko Noguchi, and I'm the Director of Public Affairs for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. I'm here with Bishop Michael Burbidge of the Diocese of Arlington, who is chair of the USCCB's Committee on Communications, and he'll be introducing our panelists today. Your Excellency?
Thank you. Thank you. Once again, welcome, everyone, and thanks for conversations we've had throughout our week together, for your presence, for your respectful way of engaging the various panelists who served on our table. It's been a great privilege to be with you. And today we're blessed also to have as our panelists Bishop Shelton Faub, Bishop Ahumo Thibodeau, the chairman of the Ad Hoc Committee Against Racism. Bishop gave us an update on the working group's continue initiatives. As we said when we issued the pastoral letter against racism, that this was not a document to sit on a shelf. It had concrete steps and responses, and Bishop Faub has been presenting great leadership to us. Bishop Gregory Mansour, the Bishop of the Eparchy of St. Marin in Brooklyn, the Chairman of Catholic Relief Services. We learned today of the tremendous work being done by CRS throughout the world. So proud of what's being accomplished. And Bishop Joe Vasquez, Bishop of Austin, who's the chairman of the Committee on Migration. So any of the questions you wish to address to our panelists, that floor is now open.
Okay, great. Thank you, Your Excellency. We'll go ahead and open the floor to questions. Please note your name and your news organization and to whom you wish to address your question. And for the benefit of those who are joining us over the live stream broadcast, I would ask that you wait for one of the microphones to come to you before you begin speaking. JD?
JD Flynn, Catholic News Agency. Thank you all. My question is for the Eparch of Brooklyn, Bishop Mansour. Thank you for your presentation on CRS today. You know, in 2016, there was a report suggesting that CRS had been complicit in the distribution of condoms in the Democratic Republic of Congo and other abortifacient contraceptives, possibly, and those kinds of reports have risen with regularity regarding CRS. Now, you and Mr. Callahan both made mention of that in your reports today, and I know you got some remarks about it from the bishops, but maybe you could say more about your process to address the Catholic identity of the programs in which CRS participates.
Thank you. Thank you, JD, for the question. So, as you know, CRS works on the generosity of the Catholic people in the United States, as well as we write grants. We won't write a grant to do something that we won't want to do. But sometimes when we write grants, some of our partners that are people that we get grants from say, you have to work with this partner or that partner. And to be honest, we are the only group that won't do contraception, won't do referrals for abortions. And we've made that very clear in when we write grants. However, when we have to work with others that don't abide by our, even Christian groups who don't abide by what we believe, it's almost like we have to do our best to remove ourselves as much as possible to avoid scandal, and to work to do God's work with the people on the ground. So, and all of those, first, the grants are vetted by moral theologians and bishops on the board, as well as laity, who have a strong sense of Catholic identity. But also, when we get a complaint, we investigate it on the ground. We go to the place and we investigate with everybody. So we do our best to do that. We work with, I think, over 1,000 different partners, Catholic and non-Catholic. So it's a lot of work to investigate all of those things. I'm not afraid of doing it. I myself, as chair, anytime anybody had a criticism, I dealt with it personally. And I think that the CRS, not only the staff, but the board now, have in place a team of people to look at each one of those now. So I think if there are still complaints out there, our ears are open to listening. But we don't want assumptions to become truth. And so we do push back when we feel an assumption has become the truth. Yeah.
Okay. Regina?
Regina Garcia with the Associated Press. Bishop Burbidge, we heard today an update on the third-party reporting system, and at least one bishop brought up if the issue whether they will receive any assistance in disseminating the number and making sure that people know where to find it. I'm wondering if you could share with us some of the ideas of how the conference expects that number to be made public, whether they're going to put it on a website, on a billboard, bulletin board. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and that's the whole key. That's the whole idea, is to we have this system in place to make sure it's well known. And so people who have concerns do not have a difficult time in bringing forth their reports. And so the conference will assist dioceses in that, but it will be the responsibility of the local diocese to come up with the ways of how they are going to make this known. So we're already suggesting, and some things are already in place. We'll use social media. We'll use our diocesan website. We'll use our diocesan publications. Not just one way, but as many ways as possible. To say, here's the process, here's where your concerns are addressed. So, and we'll learn from each other what is most effective. Thanks.
Okay, Ed Condon.
Ed Condon, Catholic News Agency. Bishop Burbidge, this is primarily for you, but earlier this week, there was an inconclusive vote on a proposal to raise the diocesan assessments for the funding of the conference's annual budget. Can you give us any update on what the proposed timeline is for resolving that vote and whether it's going to come to a conclusion?
Yeah, I think it will be conducted in a timely manner, and it will. We need to reach out to the voting members, the bishops who were not present. And so I think that happens as soon as this meeting is concluded, to allow them the time to vote in on that decision. Thanks. I would think a couple of weeks. I mean, I think the whole reason that we're discussing at this meeting, because it's for the future budget, is to give bishops enough time to go home to their diocese to plan. And so I think we're all saying quickly. So I think it's within a couple of weeks we'll know.
Okay. Chaz?
This is Chaz Muth, Catholic News Service. I'd like for, actually this is a question for everybody, and that is, a recent study was released that a majority of Catholics don't believe in the real presence of the Eucharist. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about that, about what your concerns are about that, what you see as solutions to that, and also, what are you all doing as far as discussing within your own diocese the importance to the laity about the Mass?
So we'll We'll give everyone a chance at that. I'll take the opening remark. Yes, of course, that's a concern when you see a poll or a review like that. So it reminds us of the great work that we have to do in teaching the meaning of the Eucharist, the real presence. And so that's one of the first things I did with my team is, what is this saying to us, and what are some of the responses that we can do? We learned many, if you recall, years ago we had the Year of the Eucharist that the Holy Father gave to us. And, you know, a lot of great practices were implemented at that time, teaching the doctrine, also allowing people to learn and study the Mass. That, you know, sometimes we take things for granted, what people are experiencing and celebrating, allowing the Eucharistic processions, devotions. And so it's clear to the bishops that we have work to do in the evangelization of uplifting this very teaching that is at the heart of who we are as a Catholic Church.
Yeah, it's naturally of grave concern because that's at the very heart of who we are as church and the Lord's abiding presence with us. In the Diocese of Homo-Thibodaux, we have undergone some strategic planning, and naturally adult education, as it always comes up, is a great focus for us, and that will be a part of our adult education efforts to be certain that people understand the real presence of Jesus Christ. I did see that, but you know, I have an additional question that this year, a few weeks ago, on the campus of Nicholls State University, our Newman Center opened an adoration chapel at that college campus at the request of the students. So I do see on the part of young people a great, great respect for the Eucharist and a great understanding that this is the real presence of Jesus Christ, his body, blood, soul, and divinity. And they wanted that Eucharistic adoration chapel. So it'd be interesting, you know, to find out the breakdown of the people that they interviewed, because I don't deny the study, but I do find in young people a great, great respect and understanding for the Eucharist as the real presence of Jesus Christ. So we're integrating that into our adult education, but I'm also grateful for the young people that I encounter who understand that this is the real presence of Christ.
Thank you. For sure, sir.
From the East, a word from the East. Our experience with liturgy is a little bit different, and that is a deep sense of reverence and awe, and I think when people understand, like when we ordain a priest, it's not after the gospel; it's after the bishop has received communion and the priests have received communion, and then the mysteries are covered and put at the end of the altar. And then the bishop sits in a chair right in front of the altar. And then he moves the chair aside and he puts one hand on the Eucharist and the other hand on the priest. He ordains the priest. I should say Christ ordains the priest. And the bishop is there as an unworthy intermediary. So there's a deep sense of reverence in the Eastern churches, which is quite beautiful. In fact, when the religious receive their vows, I don't know if they do this also in the Latin church, but they actually open the tabernacle, and they make their vows right in the presence of Christ himself. So, but that does not mean we don't have the same problem, but I do notice, as Bishop Fobbs mentioned, that so many people, I see them kneeling after church. I see them coming before. I see young people have a deep devotion to the Eucharist. So, I think they're like the leaven in the midst of the dough, and I hope that will catch on.
Mr. Vasquez, you want to make a comment also, and then we'll get to some more questions.
Yes, just wanted to say briefly that it is deeply concerning that we do find that many of our people do not understand this deep mystery of the Eucharist, and because the mystery of the Eucharist is what makes us Catholics. When my mother went through convert classes long, long ago, this is what attracted her to become a Catholic. And she did that preparing for marriage with my father, but this was the attraction. This is what stood out. It was the unique thing that stood out for her in being a Catholic. And so that attraction to the Eucharist, I think, is really still there. I think our people need to understand that. So it can be cultural. It can be, I think, also a lack of understanding, a catechesis. But it also, I think, it reveals maybe what's going on in society, this understanding or lack of understanding that God is really present in the world. It's really this sense of God isn't present in the world, and we have to somehow reach out to him or go looking for him. But the reality is God is present. We're sacramental by nature. That's who the church is. And therefore, we need to be very proud of that. And we should make no excuses about the great love and devotion we have for the Eucharist.
Christine?
Hi, I'm Christine Roussel from Catholic News Agency. My question is for Bishop Favre. So cancel culture, which is when people are unwilling to forgive someone for a mistake, which may be recent or old, is pretty prevalent right now. How can Catholics work to stop this trend, and what advice do you have for people who may find it hard to forgive people due to their past mistakes?
I think, you know, forgiveness begins first with recognizing my own need for forgiveness. So I always encourage people who are struggling with forgiving someone to begin first reflecting upon when they have needed that forgiveness and their desire for that. And so I think it begins with my own need for forgiveness from God, certainly, as well as from others. I think the other part is, forgiveness is a process. It's not going to be instantaneous, and it does not even mean we're never going to remember the harm or what happened. But it does mean I'm no longer binding that person to that experience. That person is now, for me, far more than that single experience. And that takes a process, and that takes conversation. That takes also a belief that a person is far more than the mistakes that they make. The person is far more even than the greatest mistake that they have made. I am far more than the greatest mistake that I have ever made. So I would simply say to remember my own need for forgiveness, that forgiveness is a process. It takes a while, you know, reconciliation and healing come about. And then to recall, it doesn't mean you're not going to remember it. Of course you'll remember it. But it does mean I'm setting that person free from that moment in time. I'm not going to shackle them to that pain that they may have caused me. And I now allow them to become more in my life. So that would be my response.
I asked a rhetorical question at a homily recently. I said, did you ever notice, and I wasn't really expecting an answer, I said, but did you ever notice how restless you are if you're holding on to grudges or bitterness? And I looked at the congregation, everyone was shaking their head. Because they know that that's the way we're created. We will not have peace. It's impossible if we are unwilling to forgive one another. That's the way we have been made. And so you, as Bishop was saying, for your own peace, you know, follow this mandate of the Lord. He gave us this mandate so we may know his peace. Okay.
Next question goes to J.D.
J.D. Flynn, Catholic News Agency. Bishop Burbidge and Bishop Ansoor, my question is principally for you, but I'm interested to hear what any of the bishops say. And I was just thinking about the decline of faith in the Eucharist, and I know like Bishop Dominique Ray and Benedict XVI have both sort of said that the decline in faith and devotion to the Eucharist is tied to a certain kind of reification of the Eucharist, especially in the post-conciliar era, and that maybe that's tied to a certain kind of change in liturgical praxis and maybe a loss of the sense of the holy sacrifice of the Mass and its correlation to the Eucharist. So I wonder if you could comment on that, the sort of relationship to our understanding of the Mass with our devotion to the Eucharist. And Bishop Ansoor, from the Eastern perspective, which has a very different relationship to liturgy and Eucharist, I'd love to hear your thoughts too.
Sure, and as bishops we're talking, we all can tell stories. I always think at our annual Life is Very Good rally before the March for Life, we host about 12,000 young people from around the country. And, you know, it's a rally. And so there's a rock band there, and they are getting the kids all riled up, and they're singing, and they're dancing. And without any announcement, without any bell or anything, we begin with the Eucharistic procession. And immediately, that whole crowd of young people who were just so riled up fall to their knees, and there's silence throughout the entire procession. So I think giving people that experience of the sacred, it's important that we celebrate the Mass with reverence, with joy, and that from that Eucharist we are strengthened for the service and to help people to make those connections, and that they're sent forth with the gift that they need. Are all essential items that we have to continue.
As Bishop Burbidge says, I don't think these are things we can teach, we can only show. If the priest runs in 5 minutes before Mass, says a quick Mass, and peace be with you, and goodbye.
Right.
But if a priest has a sense of that this is something beautiful, I loved Bishop Barron's talk about the transcendentals of truth, of beauty, and of goodness. So I think those things have to show themselves in liturgy as well. From the Eastern churches, I mean, just because we have a beautiful liturgy doesn't mean the celebrant always have the ars celebrandis, you know, the sense of how to celebrate, and sometimes even the people. So I think we've got to cultivate that. When our people come to prayer, the liturgy already lends itself as beautiful and as good and as reverent. We just have to do it well. And when we do it well, I think people respond well.
Okay. We have time for one more question. Enrique?
Enrique Soros with Latin American Bishop Council and the Essential Communicators for Bishop Vasquez. I think, and it's connected with my question, everything is summarized in the heart, in the conversion of the heart. Yesterday somebody told me, we Hispanics don't understand the point about Jesus not being present in the Eucharist. He's just there. And then I think everything is summarized. Everything comes from the conversion of the heart. Why do you think that it's so difficult for some people to understand that Jesus is present in the migrants, in the needed ones?
It's a great question. I think it's an excellent one because it really goes to the heart of the matter. Jesus himself identifies in the Gospel of Matthew with the poor, the weak, the immigrant, the sick, the hungry, the imprisoned. I mean, he clearly says, I'm not just reflected in them, I am in them. So he makes it very clear. It's not an association with, it's the very presence. So I think that's been the church's teaching very clearly. It is difficult to understand why people can't hear those words of the Lord and then say, therefore, I should take care of the immigrant and the refugee and the asylum seeker. How do I respect them? How do I care for them? It's very necessary, I think, for us to be able to do that as a people. So I think it happens in many ways. I think in many ways, maybe we have lacked to teach our own people, our own Catholics, that teaching and made it very clear. We can do it maybe in other ways, but I think what is really lacking is really that understanding. Christ is really present in that person, and therefore I must respect the person. The church teaches that these people have dignity, that dignity is given to them by God, not by me. And so I can't take that dignity away from them, no matter how poor, how sick, how tired. Those things cannot remove the dignity that God gives to the person. Therefore, my responsibility is to take care of them. And I will do everything I can to continue to advocate and speak on behalf of immigrants, refugees, asylum seekers. They're people, not problems. They are people, not problems.
Enrique, very providential. The prayer of the church today is for St. Francis Xavier Cabrini is that we will, with her intercession, be able to see the face of Christ in the stranger, the poor, the sick, and all those we meet. It's our prayer.
Okay. Well, thank you, Your Excellencies, for your time this afternoon, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the media, for your presence here in Boston.